You're listening to Highland Radio.
A very good morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition with Greg Hughes this Saturday morning. Coming up on the programme, we have a special feature on the Taste of Donegal Food Festival taking place in Donegal Town. On the theme of festivals, we check in to Falkara for the Evil Eye Festival there. It can be a stressful time for parents and children alike, especially as the younger ones start their first day at school. We'll have some professional advice. There's comedy with PJ Gallagher, and we'll have hear of an initiative to highlight the amazing work Donegal's unpaid carers do. Loads more besides. You can call the programme on 074 91 25000, text us on 086 77 00 555, and if you're on social media, it's Facebook.com/Highland Hub, or you can tweet me directly at Greg Hughes 2. Okay, 13 minutes past 10 this Saturday morning. Hope you're very well indeed. As I say, full programme lined up for you over the next couple of hours. But if there's something you want to raise, something that's grinding your gears, or something you think we should be talking about, text us 086 77 00 555. Call us to an 074 91 25000. Also coming up, we'll hear about a tractor run taking place next month to raise much needed funds for the old and new cancer bus. And as I say, there's much more besides that as well. And if we can, hopefully squeeze in a little bit of music as well. Our papers come courtesy of Kelly's Centre at the Mountain Top. And to go through them with us and to look at the news and reflect on the news in general, I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio by Michelle Nifadjean, journalist with the Donegal Democrat. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Very well indeed. Are you a Saturday morning person?
Not at all.
Everyone says that. Journalists and people in the media. Not unlike me. I love Saturday mornings. I thrive on them. Right. It's been a busy week, hasn't it? I mean, we're in the so-called silly season, but it hasn't really transpired like that. And a lot of focus was on County Donegal. What do you want to talk about first, Michelle?
I suppose the main issue I'd like to raise this morning is the case of Desi Quinn and the Ebola scare that we have seen in the last couple of days up here in Donegal. And it's obviously, it's terribly traumatic for the family in South Donegal and Mount Charles. It's been, I suppose, doubly so abrasive and caustic because of the manner in which his name has been...
It's turned the focus on what is an incredible story, and that is the story. But it's brought into focus, and it started a very important conversation, I think. And we touched on it a little bit yesterday in Highland, and that's the media's role in situations like this. Because what we do know so far is that Mr. Quinn's family learnt of the suspicion that perhaps Ebola was linked to his death. They learnt that on the news, effectively. They didn't hear that from the HSE, and they were angered by that. The local parish priest expressed that, and so did their local independent deputy, Thomas Pringle. And a debate that is ongoing at the moment, and as I just want to actually also share in passing on my condolences, they're a beautiful family, and Desi was a beautiful man. But then there's this public interest aspect that comes to pass, and the news broke on RTE, in fairness, just before 6, and he was being named not long before 7. What's do we have do we, the media, have lessons to learn on this?
Oh, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt. And I see in the newspapers this morning that the family are asking for the person from the HSE who actually released the statement saying that the individual had been brought in and was being tested for Ebola. They want that person named and shamed. I understand that, but I think it's a deeper question. I think the first thing we have to ascertain is obviously the HSE were put under pressure to release a statement, to say or ascertain this is what we're doing. That pressure was applied because we'll have to look at it in this context. We have to think, if there had been a case of Ebola, it would be in the public interest to know that. And I imagine the journalists that were working on the story at that point, that was their goal and that was their objective. They put pressure on the HSE. The HSE released a statement. The family learn about this, as you said, Greg, on the news. I think the deficiency in the HSE was, why didn't they tell the family before they released the press statement? That's the first question.
That is an important question, and that could have been done. I suppose that could have been done with never releasing a statement, even, you know, and said to the journalist in question, "Look, we're not giving you this information," because the press release from the HS. And I want to just address one thing before we go on, because the reason we're discussing this, as far as I see it this morning, firstly, is that it's a huge issue, but also, the family have publicly stated they're upset at this. Now, if we say, right, we're not going to talk about this anymore, we are censoring the family, which would be unfair. So that's why, as far as I'm concerned, after today, it's off the agenda for me in any case, because unless, obviously, there's inquiries or the family need to say something or what have you. But we had the journal last week, the journal.ie, just to be very clear, not the local paper, that said there was a case of Ebola, a suspected case of Ebola, and that was completely wrong, and the HSE had to react to that. So it's a double-edged sword. What do you do? If we had another situation whereby a report went out that was incorrect, is that as bad as them confirming, you know, this information? It's not cut and dry. Do you get where I'm coming from?
It's very difficult terrain. Another aspect of it, actually, that I found quite interesting was the fact that when the whole, I suppose, media scrum began after 6 o'clock, in terms of trying to find out who the person was, I imagine that the social networks, they became the main engine that fueled the divinity of his name.
Okay.
And I think when something like this happens, when a tragedy befalls a family anywhere in the country, anywhere in the county, that people need to come together and bring these social networks down. If it's somebody in your family, sit around and try and take Facebook down, try and take Twitter down, try and control social media so that the story that you want to deal with initially as a family and as a community is dealt with within the parameters.
Let me flip it over then this way. The HSE did release a statement. It didn't mention Letterkenny General Hospital. It mentioned Donegal. It mentioned a mortuary. Okay. You could be talking countywide panic. Mm. Is it then in the public interest to state where this occurred so that you don't have people from Mallon to Dunlow to Bundoran to Killigordon? You know, that people realise that it is a isolated case. My focus was to get the information out that it was only a suspected case and that the risk of any infection spreading at any point was going to be minimal. So is that not in the public interest then? I mean, you know, that's the quandary we have here.
Yeah, exactly. Again, you could ask the question as well, Greg. Should they have waited until they were certain?
Yeah.
Should they just have said, look, we're not discussing this. This is an ongoing situation. When we have the definitive results, then we will talk to the media, and only then. And then by doing that, you're leaving journalists and the media with no tools to go and work with.
Well, let's go over to England then, and the Cliff Richard story, of course, and how the BBC and the police handled that. You had a journalist that knew there was an investigation ongoing. Once again, it was speculated about in the media for months. The journalist went to the police and said, look, I know there's an investigation ongoing. The police said to the journalist, look, sit on the story, because if you break this story now, it could compromise the investigation, and we'll let you know when we're going to do this search, right? That's, you know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of wrong in that, but is there right in it too? Because then the journalist did hold off on the story to not compromise the investigation.
You were looking there at the symbiotic relationship between the media and the police, which is enjoyed more in England than it is in Ireland.
And is that the same as the HSE and the RTE in this case? That's my question.
Perhaps the HSE will learn lessons from this. Mm. And perhaps that's what they should be thinking about today. And perhaps that's what should have happened. But the fact that the question of Ebola was being bandied around even before it hit the 6 o'clock news, that it was going to break somewhere.
Mm. What would you have done if you had the front page of the Democrat on a Friday morning?
I know for one, I'm quite certain. I can't speak on behalf of Kieran.
No, and I'm not asking you to. Yeah. In fact, I tell you, let's just take your workplace out of it.
Right.
If you were the editor of a newspaper, because it's unfair to phrase the question like that, I suppose.
I would definitely have gone with suspected Ebola case in Donegal, and I'm quite certain that I wouldn't have named the individual. There are bottom principles.
But you would have had your paper sitting alongside 7 national papers with the name on.
I would have gone with Ebola.
Yeah, okay.
And until it was confirmed, his name was confirmed, until Ebola was confirmed, I imagine that you do also have to look at it from the aspect of you're fighting for sales. But at the same time, there's a principle that we should adhere to in the media, and that is to respect, we're local. You respect your local people, and you know, you empathise with them in times of tragic circumstances, and that is what local media do.
Well, the family had requested privacy, and I'm reliably informed there were two international film crews that were pretty much escorted out of Mount Charles by the authorities, I have to say, not in any vigilante manner, which I kind of welcome to some extent, because, you know, if there's a request for privacy, let's respect that request.
Absolutely. And another thought has run with me this morning, and that is that I imagine the NUJ should actually sit down and consider having a press liaison officer for families that are undergoing tragic circumstances or are indeed in a difficult situation. Because if you had a liaison officer in times of suicide, tragic car accidents, unusual diseases, unusual stories, sexual abuse victims, rape victims, abortion cases, if you had a press liaison officer that would be allowed the courtesy of sitting with a victim or sitting with a person or sitting with a family or saying to the family, what message do you want released to the media? And speaking to them and having a good relationship with all media and with the person in question and being able to deal with it in that respect.
Okay.
I think that's needed.
It's
I
a good
really
point,
do.
Okay. But then you have a very, very highly respected coroner who was on a programme with me not too long ago, who said that what we should be doing as the media is that, say, for instance, there is a tragic drowning. If we believe there was alcohol involved, that should be reported, which would fly in the face of everything that you've just suggested, because you wouldn't do that, because you wouldn't want to compound any grief and you wouldn't want to draw conclusions. Yet these are what medical professionals are saying. You need to be talking about these things. And we also had a professor on Sean's show yesterday who said the HSE were perfectly right. You have to get that information out there. So it's tough. Maybe it's a local national split then, really, what we're talking about, is it? And
certainly. But at the end of the day, local media always work in line with the families and those who have, you know, undergone.
And we do. We always try and respect as best we can.
We do.
086, but we obviously always, sometimes everyone makes mistakes, but I suppose that's what you can endeavour to do. 086 77 00555 is the text line. It's 074 91 25000. What else has been jumping out at you, Michelle?
I love the story this morning about the Christmas shop opening in Brown Thomas. I think that's brilliant. Absolutely crazy that a Christmas shop would open in Dublin, in Brown Thomas, in August.
But we're talking about Brown Thomas, maybe?
Yeah.
I can't get my head around it either, to be honest with you, but
it sounds quite cool and quite fashionable and quite different, and I like that aspect of it. And I know that if I was in Dublin, I would have to go in and have a look around. As well as
see, it's your fault then, so, because I'd be going, what? And then I'd see Michelle over there going, yay, it's Christmas. And that's
Christmas.
Why they've done it then, so.
Imagine if you were having an off day in Dublin and you walk into the Christmas shop.
Yeah.
I love Christmas.
Yeah, and well, I like it in December, maybe 2 weeks beforehand. just stay with us. I want to speak to Terry McAniff, hotelier Terry McAniff. Hey, Terry.
Good morning, Greg.
We've been hearing during the course of the week how, you know, there's been a real peak in tourist numbers, and there's online reports today on Donegal Daily, indeed, that Donegal hotels are at capacity. And, you know, I wanted to say, look, if there's some good news, let's get it out there. Is it as good as it sounds?
Yes, Greg, it's been a tremendous season for County Donegal. You know, I can say I experienced it myself here in the Mount Airgill, but I've been talking to people across the trade and I have yet to hear one bad word about tourism this year. The numbers are colossal coming to Donegal this year, definitely. And every hotel, not alone has been booked out this weekend, but indeed every weekend for the last 3 months, I would think.
And I'm sure you would love if the Wild Atlantic Way took a right at Dunlow and went past the front door of the Mount Errigal, but it doesn't. But it's not just that then, obviously, because, you know, the further east you go, away from the Wild Atlantic Way, you know, hotels like your own are doing really, really well. So what is where are we getting this overall lift then? So
yeah, the Atlantic Way is only one part of it. You're correct, Greg. I suppose the strength of Stirling is absolutely huge for County Donegal. And I'm sure probably the East Coast as well. As you know, sterling now is 25 cents in the pound, where going back about 2 years ago, it was almost parity, which gives the holidaymaker from the north 25% more spending power down here. Also, when the new government entered office, they reduced the VAT rate from 13.5% to 9%, and that was a huge boost for hotels as well.
Okay, so that's good news. And at the end of it, so I suppose hotels and other service providers are trying to come up with ideas and initiatives to extend the tourism season as far as possible. That would be an annual thing anyway, wouldn't it?
Oh, they are, yeah. And I mean, we've got tremendous support in this county from Donegal County Council, you know, with regard to support for our event, support for tourism. I mean, the example is probably this weekend you have the marathon in Letterkenny and you have the food festival in Donegal Town. I mean, the food festival in Donegal Town is going to be a huge national event from a small start. And credit to all the local people and the local communities. In Donegal Town's case, I think it's the junior or the chamber there. And in Letterkenny's case, the athletic club, along with the Old Town Council, took the initiative with the marathon.
And this is what where we need to go, don't we? And hopefully this will start filtering out to the community and we all get a few extra euro in our pocket and then can just spend it. And isn't that how economics work?
Yeah, that's the way economics work. And, you know, hotels have taken on more staff this year. I mean, that's a benefit to everybody. It creates more money in the Donegal economy. It's good for the shopkeepers. It's good for the person in November that there has been so much employment in July, June, July, August this year. It's good for everybody, Greg, yes.
Superb. Terry, thanks for coming on with
us. Thank you, Greg.
No harm having a bit of good news, Michelle.
Absolutely not. That is brilliant news.
And I'm not out and about as much as I used to, but you know, you can see the different faces in the towns and that little bit of a buzz there, and hopefully it's filtering through all the businesses in the county, and it seems to be.
Absolutely. I think Gidora was busy this year as well, and I was out in Armagh Island and it was very busy, and the Wild Atlantic Way is really helping the islands.
What were you doing at Armagh? Just went out sightseeing, was it? Is that it?
Yeah.
You had your camera and everything?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Wasn't a hen party or something, was it?
No.
Okay.
No.
There's so much more than that. Do that, obviously, Taryn. I was out there myself this summer, and it was it is absolutely beautiful.
It's beautiful.
As are the people, actually.
Yeah.
Which really make it, as well as the scenery. Okay, Michelle, what else are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about details of named judges' expenses to be published. The Irish Times have made a couple of bids, you know, to address the issue of expenses and judges. And now I imagine for the first time we might find out what expenses that judges from the Supreme Court to the District Court are accruing on during their daily lives in working the judicial courts. I think it's very important that we find out what expenses that they are accruing. They're a civil servant in my eyes, the same as everyone else.
And they have been untouchable for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the job they do is tremendous. And, you know, most of them are absolutely amazing, brilliant at their job. But at the same time, you know, we need to know what we're paying for.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone needs to be really on in an ivory tower, particularly now. You know, I mean, if someone would say, but judges, you know, people have mixed views on judges and what have you, and they do have a very serious job and there's a great deal of responsibility.
Absolutely.
But everyone, if we are going to be open and transparent, then that's precisely the way things have to be. And, you know, there should be
accountable.
Yeah, everyone has to be accountable. 086 77 00 555, just to remind you of the text line, 074 91 25000. Back with more after this break. Okay, and you're very welcome back to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio with Greg Hughes, and in studio with us from the Donegal Democrat, Michelle Neufadjian. Am I going all right with that pronunciation?
Yeah, you do have it, Nick. Well, a lot of people say Neufadjian because a lot of the words have been whatever, but it's Nick.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people always leave the C out.
Ni.
Yeah.
So you like Nick?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Now, what else are we talking about?
This morning we're talking about keeping our criminals in Irish jails. Apparently now it's $2,000 a week to keep a criminal behind bars. And it's crazy.
$2,000 a week?
Uh-huh.
Per prisoner?
Mm-hmm.
I presume, I suppose, when you, there's the employment costs and the heating costs and what have you. The problem is with that, though, is it not, that maybe there's just too many people in prisons that aren't actually criminals, because we're still locking people up for not paying fines. You know, you, someone doesn't pay a fine for 500 euro or something, end up in prison for 2 weeks, costs $4,000 to write off 500.
Yeah, it just doesn't balance out. I think that people need to sit down at a drawing board, people that are being really well paid for it, and just try and dissimulate between those who haven't paid their TV licence and those who have gone on a killing spree, you know, and those that are hardened criminals. And I, as well as that, I might be going off on one, as they say, but do you know what? I think that these people owe a debt to society rather than us paying our taxes to pay for them being in there.
Are we then going down the road here of community service then?
And I'd love that. Mm. And I mean good community service, something that would actually give back to the community, whether they do this behind bars, if it's a necessity, or if they do it in the community. I think I've seen a lot of it actually recently in the district court, where a lot of people are being given community service. And I think that's really good.
And what kind of community service are they given? Because we all hear this word community service, but do you get an insight from within the court as to what they end up actually doing, or
never really? But I imagine that they'd be out painting youth clubs and walls and in chapel grounds.
I wonder, does any of our listeners, have you ever seen anyone doing community service? Obviously not give us any names, but there is this sort of terminology that's used. Text us 0867 00555. Have you ever seen someone doing community service? Because I'd be very curious as to where it's actually happening.
Oh, so would I, definitely, in Donegal. I imagine it's a lot of local projects around the area that they would contribute to, you know, gathering stones in gardens and painting places and things like that. But I would imagine that if people thought that there were these group of people that they could actually make use of for, say, drama festivals, say, like right now for the Evil Eye Baller and stuff like that, that those people could contribute by directing traffic and things like that, I think that would be an absolute asset to an area where these festivals...
Would you go as far as picking up rubbish? And
why not? I wouldn't be afraid of picking up rubbish. Mm. Actually, a friend of mine went down to the beach recently in Gador and she lifted bags of rubbish.
Now, that community are doing that. That's what I'm saying. But I'm on about forcing people to do as part of community service. The only reason this... the council do a fantastic job, but the reason Donegal looks so lovely for people coming here is what... Mm. People like your friend and other community workers do on their own time after work in many cases as well. And so, I mean, let's face it, if someone commits a crime, the punishment, part of the function of that is rehabilitation. So I presume if they are, as you say, maybe working in community groups, maybe becoming more part of the community, well, then that would form part of their rehabilitation. So, it's not necessarily as severe a punishment as people might think.
But it might, at the same time, it could work in terms of bringing these people that might have been a type of mediocre criminal into society. Mm. Perhaps that they felt themselves that they were isolated. So perhaps kind of the hands of the community could bring them in and give them a better role and a greater role and have them better recognised within the society. Because a lot of people that actually do carry out criminal acts, say, for example, speeding and road dangerous driving, careless driving, you know, they're young men and it would be great to have them, contribute and have a more pivotal stance in society.
The attitude you get to a lot of, particularly the young people who have committed crimes on numerous times, is chain them up and all this kind of stuff and make them break stones. Sometimes I think in a society that means we're giving up on these people, that, you know, they are someone's, who knows what childhood they had, who knows what pressures they were under. Maybe we shouldn't be turning our back on these people and try and do more to rehabilitate them, and not just through the judicial system, but also in society as a community.
Oh, absolutely. I would be 100% behind that. I've been in court since 2004 with the Democrat, and time and time and time again, and I know my colleagues in court will absolutely stand 100% behind me, you will see a lot of the same people coming in from a young age, and they will be in the court every month or every 2 months. And you obviously sit there and you think, you know, Is there something else?
How do we break this cycle?
How do we break
and
this
cycle?
And
do they want the cycle broke? Can they do it themselves?
Or do they realise they want it broken?
A texter says, I did community service at the hospice and also at a local school. So I would love to speak to that person if they would be prepared to chat to us and tell us if it was beneficial or what have you. Keep them coming in, 086 77 00 555, or Yvonne's taking your calls on 07491 25000. Michelle, we're right up against the clock, would you believe. Have you one last tidbit for us?
One little story. It's the use of cheap surgical instruments putting patients' lives at risk in Wexford, and that's the Irish Daily Mail, the front page today.
Oh, you don't want to hear that, do you? I mean, this is in hospitals. Is it what kind of? Do we know what kind of instruments we're talking about?
We're talking about bulbs and endoscopes. And I did a Google search on endoscope before I came in, Greg, and it's the little explorative instrument that'll enter your body to look at certain organs, and the surgical is definitely 110% depending on the site. That is his eyes, and for the bulb to go in and such an instrument at such a crucial time when that's a person that is open on an operating table, and for bulbs not to be 100% or not being checked either. I just think that.
And is there a sense that this is a one-off, or is there talk of perhaps a possible review, or is it the Daily Mail doing another scaremongering health story?
I think it has its elements of scaremongering, no doubt. And I think that there has been a review, but at the same time, I don't think I'd like to get stuck on a Wexford operating table.
Michelle, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks and for having
we'll
me.
Definitely, hopefully, if you'll come back, we'd love to have you back in. That's Michelle Nicfadjean, journalist with the Donegal Democrat. Thanks so much for calling in. We're back with more on the show after this commercial break. Okay, for many parents listening, they'll be sending young ones back to school, or indeed sending them to school for the very first time. So we're going to get some advice on this from the Irish Association of Counselling and Psychotherapy, and say good morning, Shane Kelly. Shane, there's no doubt this can be a very stressful time, can't it?
It can, of course. I mean, change for anybody, adults or children alike, is something that creates anxiety, but particularly if you have children starting school for the first time, it can be a very daunting experience for the children, sometimes more for the parents than the children. But there are some things you can do to help your child transition into going to school. Something that would be really important that I'd recommend is, in preparation before they go, is try to get them a really good routine going to bed and eating before they go. And try to do this in the weeks before, not the days before, because once they get into a bit of a rhythm of sleeping and going to bed and getting up and getting back into the school routine, that'll really help them with the transition.
We may be a little late in the year for that advice for some, but on a more perhaps short term for those going back later this week, perhaps say for instance parents bringing children to school for the very first time, what would be the best approach there? What's the best advice?
If you can get to the school before the first day of school so that the children can familiarise themselves with school. I mean, even if the school is not open, go down to the school with your child and walk around it so they can familiarise themselves with the building and the outside of it. But, the best thing would be if you could get in there and have a look around the school so they know where the toilets are, where their classroom is going to be, maybe even meet some of the teachers and get so they're not so unfamiliar with everything there. If you can set up a play date with another child that might be starting with your child, try to get to know the parents, or if you know a parent, try and arrange that so they can get to know somebody, which means that on the first day of school, there'll be some friendly, familiar faces, which makes a big deal and can make things a lot easier on the day.
Sometimes one of those faces is mum or dad standing at the door crying. That should be avoided, I presume, at all costs.
I think if you show your anxiety, you're only going to pass that on 100 times to your child. So you should need to hold it together and be strong. And most children have no problem with transitioning into school. There might be a couple of minutes at the beginning where there's a little bit of separation anxiety between the child and the parent. But the teachers are very well trained and they're very sensitive to this whole thing. So they will be there on hand to help. But certainly if you're feeling anxious, try not to let it show to your child.
And there are some things first-time school goers may experience for the first time. Like, for instance, say they need to go to the bathroom at home. It's a simple procedure, perhaps, of getting up and going themselves. But when you're in a school setting, that's one of the things that can change. So we should be talking about that too?
Exactly. I would say, Greg, what parents should do is talk about the practicalities of the day for your child. So simple things like you've just mentioned there. Speak to your child about what they need to do if they want to go to the toilet. So encourage them to ask the teacher about what they need to do when they go to the toilet, or where do they put their bag, what time is lunchtime, where do they go for lunch, so that they don't feel frightened and afraid to ask these questions. Encourage them to ask the teacher questions, and so they'll realise the teacher is actually a friendly person there to help them, because they don't want to feel lost on the day and feel overwhelmed by the day and not ask simple questions. But, I mean, encourage them also to speak to their friends in the class. Make sure that to remind them, you know, smile, be nice to people, offer to help people, and ask others to play with you.
And when they come home too, it's important is that we speak to them so we understand how they're coping with it, because the one thing we do know for a fact that every child is different, and you know, some will hold things within themselves, others are very expressive. In any case, you believe we should almost have a debriefing?
I think it's a really good opportunity. You know, it doesn't matter what age you are, if you're a grown adult or a young child, the key to all of this is communication and talking. So when your child is coming home, do talk about their day. And of course, a lot of children, when you say, what did you do at school today? They say nothing. So, I mean, ask different types of questions like, what was your favourite thing you did today at school? To get them thinking, get them talking, and it gives you an opportunity to know what was going on in the day. But also keep an eye out for anything that might be concerning them. I mean, if they give you something that's worrying them, don't just brush it aside and say, don't be silly, that's grand, you'll be okay. Don't say things like that. Take what they're saying seriously, don't dismiss them, and talk about them and try and find out, well, what can we do to make that better tomorrow? It might be a small issue, but it's a big issue in their world. But keeping talking about their fears, addressing them and talking them through is really important, and it makes them feel more secure. But do keep an eye out for any changes in their behaviour. For instance, if they stop eating, or if they're in a bad mood or angry, it might mean they're having a little bit of difficulty coping with the change. You know, so cut them a bit of slack, but do talk to them quietly and softly. And if you do think there's something a little bit more serious, have a quiet word with the teacher to keep an eye out, and they will do that for you.
And you mentioned it a little earlier on, but worth repeating, I suppose. It can be also a very anxious, upsetting time for parents. It's good to talk yourselves and express yourselves and look after yourself as well, because as you mentioned, you know, we can often deflect onto our children.
Yes, I mean, particularly if this is your first child going to school for the first time. So that's a big change for the parents, because the first time that they've been away from their child maybe for quite a long hours in the day. So it's important that you kind of prepare yourself and not let your child see those fears, you know. And do talk to other parents that are in the same situation as you, because you'll feel a lot more happy knowing that you're not in the same, that you are in the same boat with other people. But of course, in the school when your child starts, you are going to meet other parents. And I think it's a really good idea to get to know them, introduce yourself, talk to the parents. You may know them already from the locality, or you may not, but it is really important to get to know each other, to create a bit of a, I suppose, a support structure for each other as parents, because there are times you'll need to know things and need help with each other. And if you get to know the parents, it really makes this a lot easier for you and your child ultimately.
Okay, some fantastic advice there, Shane. Thank you so much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you, Greg.
And that was Shane Kelly of the Irish Association of Counselling and Psychotherapy.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire
You stay the hell away from me, you hear?
I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else. I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend. Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all. My empire of dirt. I will let you down.
Johnny Cash there. Now, some of your calls and comments coming in so far in the program. Thank you so much for keeping us busy here on the Weekend Edition with Greg Hughes. 086-77-00-555 is the text line. Call us 074-91-25000. As it relates to criminal punishment, this caller thinks there should be legal aid once for anyone who does anything wrong, and they should be made to pay for it out of their benefits. Why should they learn when everything's being paid for them? That follows on that story that it costs €2,000 a week to house a prisoner in this country. A caller says anyone who gets goes for a government job is God vetted, but judges aren't. Why is this? I'm not fully aware of that, but I'll take you at your word. People who do crime, well, they should get rubbish collected along the streets. And another texter asks, how could we report on what's going on in the courts and not know what people get for community service? Well, my understanding is that's the reason why I asked the question as such, because the sentence is handed down regularly, and thought worth putting out there. Well, what do people then have to do? What is this community service that's issued so often? Some requests now for Archie Rudden in Buncrana. Happy first birthday. Just one, Archie. Happy birthday to you. That comes in from all of your cousins and all of us here at Highland Radio as well, of course. Margaret Bonner and William Lindsay, good luck on your wedding day today. This comes in from your sister, Margaret's sister, Katrina, Chris, Caitlin, Corey, Connor, and Clodesh, I think that is. Well, hope you have a fantastic day. Another one in for Margaret Boner and William Lindsay. Wishing you all the best on your wedding day. This comes in this time from the bridesmaids and best men. They've a big job ahead of them too, don't they? And also for Tomzina Callahan and Damien Harkin. They're getting married today in Castlefin, from Aunt Maureen, Pat, and the Murphy family. So lots of people celebrating a special day today. Now, I just want to mention what's coming up in Derry. It's going to be huge. Crowds up in the Fall Pride Parade today in Derry. It's the 2014 version, of course, as this is the year. Last year, the festival celebrated 20 years in existence. Free Derry Corner has been painted pink, and the Guildhall clock has also been turned pink. According to the BBC, the first festival took place in 93, 11 years after homosexual acts were decriminalised in Northern Ireland. And on Tuesday, a new centre for LGBT people was opened by Derry City Centre. Speaking to the BBC ahead of the parade, Sinn Féin MMP Martina Anderson said Fall Pride had become a real fixture in the city's calendar, adding that it's a great celebration of equality, tolerance and diversity. Right, still to come on the show, so much planned. PJ Gallagher, a comedian of national and international fame, will join us on the phone to talk about his gig tonight. It's the Laugh Out Loud Comedy Night in the Clannery Hotel in aid of Laura Lynn Children's Hospice. He's just one of the key performers. And we'll also have a special feature on the Donegal Food Festival taking place in Donegal Town.